Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
There is some research that has claimed that conductors live longer compared to other professions. Now, what is it about the transformative power of music that can keep people's minds ticking over and outside the waving of the baton? What skills are conductors using as they take charge of an orchestra? Well, we're joined by conductor David Brophy. Very welcome.
Morning, Claire.
You're going to tell me now that you're 105. And
not quite, not yet. I'm a little bit away from 105. I'm not even halfway there yet. So.
Well, listen, let's talk about this research and what we're hearing. I mean, we do know that there are a lot of conductors, and certainly over time, we know that there are conductors working into their 70s, their 80s and their 90s, and they're doing it with no bother, it would seem.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not 100% familiar with the research, but I would say if I want
but
to...
But you know from your own
Yeah,
life.
But I give a bit of nuance to it. The nuance is that... I'd say there's lots of other people who work in other professions who live through their 90s as well. But I'd say conducting is one of maybe the only or the very few professions where it seems to be acceptable to work until you've hit your final downbeat or you go to the great big orchestra in the sky, you know.
Yeah.
When you look at particularly nowadays, I mean, the great Herbert Blomstedt turned 97 last summer and he is still conducting. He's conducting in Munich, I see online. He's conducting in January in Munich. And when you look at conductors like Leopold Stokowski, who at the age of 94 signed a 6-year contract with CBS Records to take him to the age of 100. He didn't make it. He died when he was 95. There is this thing that as a conductor, you can just keep going until you eventually end up 6 feet under.
What's the allure of it, of conducting?
Why do you conduct? It's power. That's what it is, Claire. It's power.
I'm glad you're honest about it.
And even the election, it's power. No, I mean, I think, yeah, I'm sure. Like, if we were to lie down on the leather couch here, you'd find some deep psychological problem, which meant that I was kind of taken towards conducting. But it's the best music. That feeling of standing in front of an orchestra, and I would say you don't really have power, but there's a level of influence, maybe is the way I'd put it, and you shape in some way the music, and it's like it's the best
so
for
it's
me. It's an adrenaline rush,
right?
You know, and we've had conversations before about what happens to your body when you sing, and your brain releases endorphins and oxytocin, and that sense of making music. But also, I think there's probably something in the fact that you're cognitively processing a lot of information to a score. If you look at an orchestral score, and all the notes that are being heard in front of you, all the thousands of notes that happen every minute in front of you are all in front of you, and you're processing with your eyes, and then you're also moving to that at the same time. So there's kind of cardio workout. I mean, I know after rehearsal, you know, like after a vigorous rehearsal, I'm conducting really difficult stuff. I feel it physically, you know, and it is a workout for me. And people who know me well know that there's not really a pick on me, you know, so and I can't put on weight. I eat very well, you know. So there is, I do get the sense there is a kind of physical workout combined with the cognitive mental stimulation. There must be something in that which means that my breed go on a bit longer than others.
And do you have to work for a long period of time in rehearsals with a group of musicians, with an orchestra, before you reach that point where it is sort of magical and the thing is happening?
Oh, God, this is the great Simon Rattle said that you were competent when you were 60. I'm not 60 yet. So that's how long the kind of training is when you start. And the other English conductor, John Elliott Gardner, said, you know, if you're very young, like in your early 20s, or you're very old in your 90s, you're magic. And anywhere in between, you've just got to survive.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a long way.
But
and it depends.
If you're going in your 20s, like you're banking on all of the musicians being willing to trust you.
It's a really good point, because, I mean, by rights, I shouldn't be conducting in Dublin. I mean, I've worked my entire career with the RTE Concert Orchestra and the National Symphony Orchestra. Mm-hmm. And I've committed every sin in front of those musicians imaginable, none of which are forgivable. And yet they forgive me. And I, you know, admired their both the players and both orchestras' capacity to let go of all my demeanours when I was learning and trying to become reasonably good at my game. And as you know, I started a position earlier this year in Cologne. They get me. They don't know me, so they get a more finished product than the people here in Dublin I've had over years. So the training part of it is very difficult. But if you can get past those tricky years where you're trying to work out who you are as a conductor and what it is to be a conductor. And of course, when you stand in front of an orchestra in your 20s, as I did for the first time, everyone in front of you knows more than you. And you have to pretend you actually know more than them, and of course you don't.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. They musicians give so much, and it's never said, in order to play an orchestra, they give up themselves so much, they give up so much autonomy They go with the conductor. They're told how long, how short, how fast, how slow, how loud, how soft for the rest of their careers. And then they give so much to themselves in performance as well at the same time. So, I mean, it is an honour. And the longer I do it, the more I feel privileged.
Yeah,
to,
but
to
it's a performance from you as well. Because
yeah.
You mightn't feel like the most confident person in the world, but you have to be in that room in that moment the most confident person.
You say performance there and it kind of brings to mind that, like, we all wear a facade. You've got your facade on the radio. It's not the same person you know, you were at home, I presume.
Yeah.
I'm not like this at home, you know. So there's a performance element to it. But you also, at the same time, try to give something that's authentic so that you let people in and you try to come across as being real as well, I think.
Mm-hmm. But you're being your best professional self in that.
Yeah,
moment,
I mean, right? I think back to my early days and I was very guilty of overconducting, which means you're doing too much and the players are suffocated. They can't actually play. And I think the older you get, the less you do, and the more you feel, oh, I feel free now, and they feel free, and they play better actually. And I realise, God, the older I get, the more I go, God, did I really do those things when I was younger, in my 20s and 30s? How bad was I, you know?
Should we all say that?
So,
in every profession,
it's,
don't
it's
we?
Like, to be honest with you, conducting is like, it's a lifelong pursuit. I mean, I hope the day before I die, I'm still learning something. And that's, mm-hmm. I think that most conductors think the same way.
You mentioned 97-year-old Herbert Blomstedt earlier. And we have a piece of music now we can listen to.
Yeah, this is the opening of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, the first movement. And he recorded this in 2017 when he was 90 years young. So this is the 90-year-old Herbert Blomstedt and the first movement of Beethoven's Fifth.
So I listen to that and I go, well, that's lovely, and we all know it and it's great to hear it and all the rest. You listen to it and you hear what about how it's being conducted?
So that's experience, that's dripping with experience for me, because most young conductors, when they get delivered Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, I think I was probably 27, 28 when I did my first Beethoven Five, I would conduct it faster than that. And even now, I'd probably conduct it faster than that. But when I listen to that, the experience he has at 90 years of age conducting that, it has more time to breathe. There's more space in it. And there's this theory that as you get older, time gets faster, which is a non-musical theory. Uh-huh. And that's why a lot of us get up earlier in the morning as we get older. And we kind of feel, you know, if you're 10 years of age, a year is a tenth of your life.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're 90 years of age, a year is a 90th of your life, you know. So time changes as you get older. And you know, even I've got old recordings of Leonard Bernstein at home conducting, like, Cesar Franck's Symphony in D minor, and he takes the opening so slow you can barely make sense of the music. The first note goes on for ages. So this sense of getting older and the music that you're conducting getting slower, you can kind of hear there. Now, it's not so slow
that you don't recognise it,
you know, but I can hear that's dripping with experience.
But again, that is experience, isn't it? And confidence as well, to be able to say, this is how I want this music to be heard.
Well, if you go online on YouTube, there's videos of the Bavarian Radio Symphony Orchestra on their very good website of rehearsals with Herbert Blomstedt, and he has an amazing full head of white silver hair, straight hair. He was American-born Swedish conductor, and you see him conducting and he's just dripping with youth. He might as well be 10.
Yeah.
Even though you know he's 97, he'll be 98 next summer.
Well,
there's
a lesson in this as well for pursuing your passion.
I think there's also something as well when you talk about playing, like when you talk about playing an instrument, playing the piano, playing the violin, my best play, like if we think of ourselves as being most freely creative, was when I was probably 7 or 8. And I would think back when I was growing up in Sandry, like next door neighbour would be having the extension built on the house.
Yeah.
And they drop sand. You know, the sand used to be dropped out on the road outside. Mm-hmm. I would get my Macboss cars and then dig holes in the sand and have tunnels. And that's when I was at my most freely creative, not in the space. And I think there's a sense all musicians, all creative, like visual artists, everybody else, want to return to that freedom. And as we get older, there is a kind of a, we all think there's a regression back to childhood, And that there's a sense, you know, some people might remember years ago I had a TV series, The Choir of Ages, where I put
yes.
older people with younger people in the one choir to see what the connection was. Mm. And they did have a connection the way that maybe middle aged people don't. Yeah, it's amazing.
God, it's
extraordinary thing. Yeah, it is extraordinary.
I have another little piece of music as well. This is from the 1940s version of Fantasia, the Disney classic. Now, why did you want us to hear this?
So this is conducted by Leopold Stokowski. Whose mother, by the way, was Irish. Annie Moore was her name. And he was born in 1882 and he died when he was 95. He was the guy who signed the six-year contract when he was 94. But he was a free thinker, free spirit. And his great break, I think, was to record all the soundtrack to Fantasia from the 1940 Disney film. And this piece we're going to hear now is by the Russian composer Modest Mussorgsky. And this is Night on the Bear Mountain.
Now, just before we finish, I want to ask you about Simon Rattle and how he terrifies people when he walks into a room.
Does he? I've never known that.
He changes how people play just his very presence without doing anything, right?
Well, yeah, it's not necessarily Simon Rattle. The one person that is known for this was the old German conductor Wilhelm Furtwängler. And I remember seeing an interview with the timpanist of the Berlin Philharmonic, who, if you're a timpanist, you play kettle drums at the back of the orchestra, so you don't play an awful lot.
Yeah.
So he would not just play his timpani part, he would follow from the orchestral score. So he'd be looking at what's going on around him, and he's in rehearsal one day and the sound suddenly changes around him, and he looks at the violins. Well, they're not doing anything different. And he looks at the woodwinds, they're not doing anything different. Why is the sound so different? Looks at the conductor, the conductor's doing nothing different. And then he looks at the back of the hall. And Wilhelm Furtwängler, who was the chief conductor of the Berlin Philharmonic at the time, he just walked into the theatre, sat down, and all the players changed their sound. So that's the Holy Grail. That's what we're all looking for. That sense that your very presence creates a sound. You bring your sound with him. And
what do you think it was? That the musicians were trying to impress him?
Yeah,
I think straighter.
There's a little bit of that as well, which kind of brings the kind of notion of like that, I suppose, old-fashioned autocratic style of leadership, which is like, you know, I'm up here and you all do what I say.
Yeah.
And nowadays, working with an orchestra is more collaborative. And also I kind of get the sense that, you know, back in the day, music education maybe wasn't what it was now. And the players come into orchestras now, they're so highly trained, so highly educated. Any conductor who tried to approach an orchestra the way that Furtwängler did
wouldn't get away with it
at all.
David, we always love having you in. Great
Thanks,
to see
Claire.
You.
Thanks for having me.
David Brophy.